His recent article, The Last Dance, on heading to Olympic Rio. He's also the author of Brazil's Dance with the Devil, the World Cup, the Olympics, and the Fight for Democracy. Dave, you mentioned displacement, the displacement of people in the area. There's a few figures that are interesting. Nearly two-thirds of Brazilians, 63%, think hosting the Olympics will hurt Brazil, according to a recent study. Only 16% said they're enthusiastic about the Games. 51% they said they have no interest in the Games. But talk about the turmoil in the area, the people we won't see interviewed when the networks are down there.
Yeah, I mean, the people who won't be interviewed are going to be protesting today. There's a large protest planned in Rio for today. And these are the people who have been displaced. These are the people who have been the victims of police violence. And these are the people who the Olympic monolith has basically landed on top of over the last 8 years. And these are also the folks who feel lied to. Because when the Olympics came in, they were brought in with a promise that they would be used as a tool to tackle inequality inside of Rio. And the opposite has taken place. As one councilman said to me, Rio is now a more unequal place than it was before the Olympics came. Now, some of that is due to the economic crisis, but people, I think, have to understand that the Olympics do not exist on a parallel realm to the economic crisis in Rio. They have been an aggravator of that very crisis, because they've taken out infrastructure funds at a moment when people need them desperately, particularly around issues of health and education.
Dave, we want to thank you for being with us and look forward to talking to you in Rio. Dave Zirin, sports editor for The Nation magazine. His recent article is called The Last Dance on Heading to Olympic Rio, author of Brazil's Dance with the Devil, the World Cup, the Olympics, and the Fight for Democracy. He's host of Edge of Sports, and that does it for our show. We have two job openings, development manager and senior video producer. Check our website at democracynow.org for details.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:01. Next up is Positively Revolting.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Rock the Block Matt Dishman Community Center Block Party and Appreciation Event, Saturday, August 13th at the Matt Dishman Community Center in Portland. Activities include crafts, a rock climbing wall, inflatables, a dance party, and resource table from local agencies and businesses. Again, that's the Matt Dishman Community Center Block Party and Appreciation Event, Saturday, August 13th at the Matt Dishman Community Center, 77 Northeast Knott Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You know you love KBOO's programming, but did you know you can help inform decisions about new programs on KBOO? Support evaluating shows to ensure programming excellence, as well as help process feedback about shows from our listeners. Well, you can when you join the KBOO Programming Advisory Committee. All you need to be is a KBOO member. Attend monthly meetings on the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. at KBOO, and commit 5 hours a month to work on committee-related tasks. The Programming Advisory Committee works alongside KBOO programming staff to live out our programming charter. You can find out more at kboo.fm/committees. See you the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. KBOO needs you.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Vote Brexit, are we evacuate the oppressed?
And good morning. Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. I am Lynn. I'm here with Ani.
And good morning.
Mm-hmm. And we are Together Positively Revolting, a morning talk radio show where we try to bring you things you don't hear on other talk radio shows, and we've been fairly successful so far. So this morning, we're really happy to have two delegates from our amazing Oregon delegation to the Democratic National Convention. Cole Richardson, say good morning, Cole.
Good morning.
And Abby Collins.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I'm very happy to have the two of you here. You were, of course, Bernie Sanders delegates because almost everybody from the Oregon delegation, except for, how many super delegates were there?
I believe there were 13.
13 super delegates, really?
From Oregon, correct.
And they were all, how many of them were Hillary Clinton supporters?
All but two. And three. Three. I stand corrected.
Okay.
Jeff Merkley, Lupita Maurer, and Larry Taylor.
Thank you for having all those facts, Abby. And did Jeff Merkley finally end up being the head of the delegation, or did he have to share that with Wyden?
Fortunately, he was the primary who made our announcements during roll call.
Excellent.
So we were pleased by that. And he fortunately did not neglect that we were a burner state, which I appreciate, given that we were, our constituents voted 58.6% for Bernie Sanders.
Right. So just to sort of backtrack a little bit, I'd like to know how the two of you got involved in this and what made you become a Bernie Sanders supporter. And just to say that Ani and I have no horse in this game. We're asking questions, but we cannot endorse or unendorse, I guess.
It's true. We are constrained.
We are constrained, but we are we're questioning. So there you go. So, so Cole, how'd you get involved in all of this?
Well, I work at the Oregon Working Families Party as a field manager, and quite some time ago, the Working Families Party opened up a poll to their members asking which candidate we should endorse in the primary. 87% of the vote went to Bernie. So that actually allowed Working Families to send me to work on the campaign as a field organizer. So I worked for the campaign in Reno, Nevada, and then...
Oh, good. I have some questions about what happened there.
I unfortunately was not... I didn't take too much part in what happened in those conventions. Most of what I did was just preparing for the caucus, mm-hmm, and dealing with the caucus. So I worked in Nevada, and then once the campaign came around to Oregon, I helped start it, and I worked long, long hours in the Portland headquarters for Bernie.
But what sort of what made you want to do it?
What made me want to do it? Bernie Sanders is the first and only presidential candidate that I've had any sort of real passion for, because he speaks about issues that are very relevant and very necessary, like $15 minimum wage, healthcare for all. These are things that we really needed 10 years ago, but the United States is unfortunately lagging behind the rest of the world in some regards. So I supported Bernie because, you know, he could kind of drag us into the present, really.
Okay. Abby? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Ani.
I was just going to say, and for you, Abby.
Well, my involvement was more serendipitous and I would say arbitrary. And I'll speak frankly to that because
please.
I know that some people probably will be upset because I was told that I became a delegate. And mostly because in the past year, I had not worked on the campaign. I was actually fighting cancer. I was diagnosed almost a year ago this month, and I will not know until the, September, October, whether I'm in remission. So it was not something that I had expected or planned to do. I had showed up at the Congressional District 3 convention merely to support another candidate. And months and months ago, I would say probably early in the year, she had often come to visit me when I was in the thick of things during my treatment and post-surgery. And we would often talk about politics. She was fascinated by my history because I have spent 15 years as a journalist, both working domestically and internationally for a variety of newspapers and wire services. And so when it came around to the convention, she had asked if I would come and support her as a candidate because she had worked very heavily on the campaign. And I said, sure, what do I need to do? And she says, well, you just need to register. And so I did that, and I figured that was the least I could do. When there were certain deadlines that were coming up, I got email notices, and she and I had talked just prior. And I said, you know, if I'm going to spend all day there, because quite honestly, there was a wine event that I wanted to go to that same weekend, I said, to make it worth my while, do you mind if I just throw my hat in the ring so I can have a better understanding of the process? And we had a very serious conversation because I asked her, you know, I want to make sure I don't take any votes away from you. Do you feel that this will inhibit your progress in garnering more votes, or will it bring attention away from your candidacy? And she said she felt it did not, because there were over 160 candidates at the time, so my chances were very slim
to be delegates.
Yes.
Okay. And so this person you're talking about was going to be a delegate.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, she was vying for a delegacy seat. And so I thought, oh, good, you know, I can just go and be part of the process and learn what happens behind the scenes, however, not put any skin in the game, mm-hmm. so to speak. Well, the day of the convention came, it was there was a higher turnout than usual because it was moved at the last minute to Gresham High School. Very hot day, over 100 degrees. We were hundreds of people. I think there was, 500 or 600, do you remember, Cole?
Oh, gosh, there was a lot of people.
About 500 or 600 packed into the gym there, so it was a definite sauna. I was not feeling good that day. I was still, you know, pretty weak and coming off various treatments, and I remember debating with myself that morning whether I should actually go. And I thought, no, I've made a commitment. You know, I don't want to let anyone down, particularly my friend who I'm supporting, so I decided to attend, but not in the morning where people were campaigning for between the hours of 11 and 1. So I thought, well, I'll show up just before, mm-hmm. at 1 o'clock. I had submitted a bio to the voter's pamphlet, which was one of the requirements, and that was about the extent of it. That day, they had the women candidates go first. There were a lot of, a lot had actually dropped out because of the heat and for various reasons. So I would say there was probably 75.
Was there no air conditioning in this place you were?
None.
Oh.
None whatsoever.
At least not on our side.
The Hillary delegation, the caucus, they were in the cafeteria and nicely in an air-conditioned...
Wow, it started out soon, didn't it? Whoa.
It did. And the funny thing is people had mentioned that day. There was enough room in other parts of the school campus that could have accommodated us with air conditioning. And people even then questioned whether it was deliberate. And I thought, nah. But as things progressed, I think there was a little bit of just... I don't know what to call it. It's hard to speculate, but...
Can't rule out, I think is what we say in the medical trade.
Thank you.
Can't rule out.
Anyway, I spoke no more than 30 seconds because there was an actual vote on how long candidates should speak. And long story short, I was shocked, beyond shocked, when I was one of four people in a runoff. In fact, I was... people who were sitting around me, because I sat mostly in the corner that day just keeping to myself, and they said, that's you. And I was like, no, it can't be. And then there was a runoff, and I was chosen as one of the three delegates. So that's pretty much it.
Well, what made you want to support
Bernie Sanders? Knew I wanted to support Bernie Sanders. I have tracked his career for many years, but I think the crux of it is more than a year and a half ago, I had done a survey on iSideWith, which is something that I had continually and consistently recommended to people. I mean, even people in the Democratic Party who were not familiar with this survey, I was constantly posting it because I've always been political, not active in the political arena, but on the fringes, having covered it as a journalist. So this was.
So what's different about this?
This experience?
This
well,
survey.
The survey.
The survey.
For those of us that don't know,
yeah.
I side with. What is
that? So I side with ask you a lot of questions, both your values and beliefs and opinions, socially, politically, economically, that really take your algorithms and narrow it to a certain party, to a certain candidate, and they apply percentages as to who you align with, mm-hmm. Ideology-wise, mm-hmm. in regards to a party and a candidate. So and very high I scored with Bernie Sanders. So I felt very legitimate in representing him.
Excellent, excellent.
So you were on your path, as it were, delegates to the DNC, supporting Bernie Sanders, and so. You're going through this process before mid-July, you know, before early July. What did you expect the DNC to look like? What did you expect that experience mm-hmm. to be?
Gosh, I really had no idea, and I actually prepared for my time probably pretty well by watching a documentary about the 1968 convention because
that was a good one to look at.
Cole. Yeah, yeah, and I really thought that the convention would mirror it.
In some ways it did.
I'm very glad. I was afraid there was going to be riots outside of this one, like in 1968.
No, that did not happen.
So that didn't happen. But so I kind of I knew that it was going to be tense from the moment we walked in there, just because of the circumstances surrounding the convention. Especially with the emails coming out, because that was just kind of the validation for us. It's like, oh, you thought we were all conspiracy theorists, and well, here's the proof. So it definitely, like, tensions were very, very high in there, and I really didn't know what to expect other than I'm going to go into what's going to feel like probably a war zone in there, and I wasn't so far off.
How did you feel about when the emails came out that it was like, oh, nothing to see here, let's move along?
Same old stuff.
Was that a surprise?
It was no surprise to see that. And when I heard that, and reaching out to friends who were back home and my parents just watching mainstream media, I asked them, you know, hey, is there any coverage about these emails? Yeah, there's coverage about the emails, but all the coverage is about where the emails are coming from and not the contents of the emails. Like, great, great. So, you know, let's just completely disregard the fact that these emails are uncovering, you know, instances of election fraud and the Clinton campaign actually conspiring with mainstream media. Nope. Let's concern about the Russians. It's the Russians.
Yeah, and so it was definitely more of a story after some spin happened about where the information may have come from rather than the information itself. And in fact, I saw so much opinion pieces, so many opinion pieces that actually just flatly said that. Like, really, there's nothing in these that would even begin to compare to the importance of how these dastardly things were gotten. And that kind of blows my mind, because we're talking about really the underpinnings of our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. I thought we were good. So you know, don't pay attention to the content, but the source you always, and I, as somebody who does some journalism, sources are important to pay attention to, but you don't ignore the content, is my humble opinion. I don't know. Yeah. So that's the atmosphere that the convention starts under. All right. So let's walk it through a little bit.
Do you mind if I answer that same question?
Please.
So going in, I think I had a unique background and perspective in comparison to many of my delegates because, one, and I also think that contributed to my candidacy and becoming a delegate was my unique background as a journalist. I did not have the fear and intimidation I think that many did because I've been in very precarious situations both here in this country and overseas. And so I'm a consummate skeptic. I always take things as they come. And there was a lot of pre-planning. My opinions and my disposition did not start to formulate until I was actually going to local meetings, whether it was at the county level, at the congressional district level, at a district level, and then at the state. And that's when I really began to formulate that, yes, this is going to be a hostile environment going in. And so that's when we needed to prepare accordingly, because it really, the anti-Bernie, pro-Hillary sentiments were very strong here at the local level. I was actually surprised given the way our state primaries had unfolded. So the other interesting thing that I wanted to mention, and forgive me if I'm not formulating my thoughts, but in regards to the WikiLeaks, there are things that are still unfolding today. I mean, they estimated, 30,000 emails? Today I saw a article from Pakistani Global, because I don't just rely on news sources in this country. And it was very egregious about how the Clinton Global Initiative had helped fund, and granted, this is only a news article from overseas, and it has a certain slant and bias, so
every news article on the planet does.
And I have not done any validation on this, but it was talking about how there were funds from CGI that funded Clinton Global Initiative that had helped funded, in essence, ISIS. And what people don't understand, and I often recommend a documentary called Clinton Cash, which talks about how much the Clintons actually make. And it was the first administration or presidency where and forgive me if I keep going on and rambling on, because I could
keep going. We'll cut you off when we want to.
Okay. Well, it was the first administration that actually was a huge money-making endeavor. And the reason I can speak to some legitimacy on this is because in the 96 election, I had actually interviewed every presidential candidate. I worked for a news organization in the Bay Area. And my beat at the time was actually education. And I had uncovered a lot of interesting things because I also covered it on a national level. And that afforded me the opportunity to be one of two pool reporters in the state of California. So whenever later on, when Clinton became president, whenever he came to the state of California, I was allowed to serve with the White House press corps. In any case, so I have great familiarity with their administration. And after leaving, it was amazing to me how Clinton could garner up to 200,000 per speaking engagement. And he just rolled with it. I mean, that was easy money. To the point that overseas, he can get up to $700,000 per speaking engagement. And a lot of that money is filtered through their Clinton Foundation. And in turn, that money goes to various projects also campaigns overseas. What people don't realize is that a lot of these campaigns on the international scope sometimes support candidates who have very poor humanitarian records, and the kickbacks are often in resources. So I feel, and I'm sure that there are people who will call in and debate this with me, and I can't.
Not necessarily on Twitter.
But we are dealing with our listeners. And I think the reason I think that this is important information to bring out
Because what you're talking about is really the underpinnings of the neoliberal agenda in the way that our the U.S. makes the world safe for capitalism, basically. To quote Billy Bragg, because I love that song, it is the same game that we've been seeing since the 90s in the trade agreements, in securing our resources wherever they may be found in the world. And I, you know, say that with my tongue firmly in my cheek. You know, it's that old, how did our oil get under their sand? I don't, you know, how does that happen? But we are watching that continue. I want to go ahead and remind our listeners it's a call-in show. You can join the conversation. 503.
Since Abby invited you.
Oh,
503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. 503-231-8187. Also want to invite you to follow along, Positively Revolting, all through the week in whatever social media platform you choose, as long as you choose either Facebook or Twitter. So Facebook, you can find us there, Positively Revolting. On Twitter, you can find us at Positive Revolt. And so with that, I guess I should... What do we say about this? We re-ID our guests.
Yes, we do.
This morning, we are very happy to have with us a couple of delegates that spent last week in Philadelphia. And so we have Cole Richardson and Abby
Collins.
Last name has jumped out of my head. Thank you.
The lovely Abby Collins.
Thank you so much.
And yes, we appreciate you two being here. And so
I want to.
Okay.
I was thinking we'd just jump straight into. So then it all happens, right? The Monday of the DNC, in looking at it, just the reports, wow, so that was a first day. There was more action packed into that first day than I think in like the previous 10 political conventions combined. So Leon Panetta spoke, many things happened. Protesters, we call that... some of the delegations, probably the Oregon delegation, started chanting "No more war." Just unpack that day, because really, there's so much.
I'm trying to remember. It wasn't Leon Panetta that second or third day.
Maybe, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
It was Tuesday.
As I'm saying, yeah. 4 days, action packed. They're all jumbling together in my head. So yep. I'm glad you're here. First day, what happens that first
day?
Well,
actually, we can even go back and go to Sunday.
Okay, let's do Sunday.
That's where the real action started. There was. A pretty big delegate party at the Philadelphia Art Museum, and you know it was probably the most bougie,
for lack of a better,
extravagant. Thank you, Abby. Yeah, it was definitely the most extravagant party I've ever seen. There was a person in this inflatable ball rolling around a fountain with rose petals in it. It was strange.
I'm just going to sit with that image for a minute. So, person in a hamster ball floating in a fountain with rose petals. Okay, I'm there.
A woman in a unisuit.
Super happy to hear that this is how our resources are spent.
Yes.
Right on. Yeah. Homelessness, healthcare, the heck with it.
So, it was just a mingling party, but...
human hamster balls. About, that's the wave of the future.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll stop now.
Okay. So Cole, ridiculous. So it was... what was the purpose? Was there a purpose?
It was just a mingling thing, like...
Get to know each other?
Yeah,
kind of
let's
thing?
Get to know each
Honey,
other
you've been to
we...
conventions. You know what those things are.
I'm just asking questions.
Okay.
Know your enemies, I guess. So,
a mixer, so to speak.
Yeah, it was definitely a mixer.
There was and you
a
felt
mixed crowd.
Yeah.
Things were just going normal, like a mixer would go, until about 10, 15 minutes before the party was supposed to end. I'm sitting outside and I just hear these chants, Bernie, Bernie, Bernie. And then these chants just continue, and they continue to with. So there was Bernie, 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 down with Debbie. And then I think there was even Bernie or Bust. And this is how the convention started. This is Sunday night before anyone ever walked on a bus or into the convention hall itself. That really kind of set the precursor for how the week was going to go.
So who was the rowdiest delegation?
Oh, it's tied between us and California.
All right.
Probably.
Represent Oregon. Yes. So who do you think started that what happened at that party?
I'm not sure.
And not that, I mean, I
it was definitely gravitated around Oregon, I know, because it was started, I wasn't there, but I could definitely hear it, and I believe it was where a lot of the Oregon delegates were sitting. There were a lot of people. It might have been started by California. Anyway, I'm not certain. Maybe you have more clarification on that.
I was just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. It happened.
So the West Coast basically sort of ruled the dissent at the convention.
Certainly.
Definitely.
Good to hear.
Yes.
Very good to hear. Okay, so that was Sunday.
We are the left coast.
We are. That's what they say.
So that was Sunday before the convention. So then Monday happened.
I was busy giving chocolate-covered strawberries to people who worked at the convention. That was my role.
That was very nice.
That seems like a good role.
I figure if they're not getting $15 an hour, they may, you know, they should get some perks too.
Chocolate-covered strawberries are a fine perk, though perhaps not a living wage.
No, not at all.
Dang. So Monday happened, first day of the convention, things and such. Let's go there and... We started hearing about the Oregon delegation early on in the evening. So let's hear from you. You were inside. What happened? How much was planned and how much just happened?
So prior to the actual convention, Monday is a very telling, pivotal moment because the day before we had gotten word that Bernie Sanders himself. Oh, my mic just went out. There we go. Bernie Sanders himself had wanted to address his delegation personally before he addressed the rest of the nation on live later that night. And I thought it was extremely thoughtful and very considerate to want to address his delegates beforehand. There was some issue and complaint about whether it should start at 2 o'clock, because gavel time was at 4. We did not want to miss the beginning of gavel because sometimes there are votes that are put to the floor, and we didn't want the entire Bernie Sanders delegation to miss out on something that might be pivotal as well. So there was a lot of pushback from delegates to start this meeting where Bernie was to address us at 12:30. And that was at the Philadelphia Convention Center. That morning, at our morning state delegation breakfast, there was no animosity quite yet. I think there was already some tension, but nothing overt. So things were going smoothly. We went to the convention center. Everybody had an early morning start. We were able to go to some caucus meetings. We were able to go to some, you know, informational tables. Then Bernie had spoke to us at 12:30, and it was a very, very emotional event for many people. You could look around the room, and I must clarify, there was no media involved. It was purely the delegation. So I felt that, you know, for him, it was a way of really trying to get to the hearts of his voters that this is what we need to do. And then, of course, later that night, it was all for show. I think that he experiences pressures that we can't even imagine. And because we as delegates experienced pressures, I'm sure that the magnitude that he was feeling them was 100-fold. And that, again, is only speculation, but, you know, trying to put yourself in the mind and body and spirit of someone who has, you know, a year ago wasn't a viable candidate, and the convention already in April had felt like, or I should say the DNC had felt like he wasn't going to be around. He was going to fall off radar, and that's why they planned everything around Hillary. After we were...
Do you really think that's why they planned everything around Hillary?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
But I'm going to finish Monday first.
I have
suspicions. Yeah. That's only part of it. The tip of the iceberg, I often say. So on Monday, when we were released from the Philadelphia Convention Center, a lot of the Bernie delegates were filtered out to catch buses granted, all these buses were very secure buses. They had Homeland Security officers placed on them for our protection. And so you couldn't just take any form of transportation, whether it was the, you know, the subway or Uber, or so we were forced to wait for buses to transport us, because going to the Wells Fargo Center, where the actual convention takes place, is a huge compound surrounded by not just one, but two gated walls. And there were more than 10,000 officers filtering and milling about all over the city, and a good portion at the Wells Fargo Center. And just to give a little background, of those 10,000 officers, 6,000 were Philadelphia PD, and the remaining was an undisclosed number, somewhere between another, you know, maybe 4 to 6 of Homeland Security, Secret Service, state police, and state patrol. And anyway, so we had to wait in 98 degree weather, 89% humidity, on a sidewalk that was cordoned off with barricades for our security. You know, Philadelphia sidewalks are pretty wide.
That term, your security, is just so loaded, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay. Philadelphia sidewalks are pretty wide, and the barricades had cut them in half. And so, with, you know, 1,900 delegates, I think the exact number is 1,860, were squished into this small area, and people were starting to feel the burn, literally, from the weather and the elements, and were starting to drop like flies. I could see, I mean, you couldn't even move your elbows. That's how crammed I felt. Like, this is what, you know, being piled into boxcars on the way to, and I don't want to make it that extreme, but it felt very extreme, to the point where I remember running through traffic across the street to a Panera Bread and grabbing like 10 cups, giant cups, and just filling them with ice, and then running back across the street to the crowds and passing out, telling people, take the cup, take a cube of ice and pass it on, because we were getting so dehydrated. And there was, everybody had already went through their water. And this was all before we got to the actual Wells Fargo Wells Fargo Center, where the actual convention had taken place. So already people were feeling despondent. And I remember I got, at that point, I had practically imploded when I got there, because I was so busy looking after other people. There was another delegate from the from Oregon who was passing out electrolytes. It was a serious matter, especially for older people. One of our super delegates, as well as myself, end up having some real severe consequences from the dehydration, to the point he was not able to vote the next day. And I had went down for breakfast to sign my vote, but I came later to the convention center the next day, because there were so many people who were physically impacted. And that's not something to take lightly.
Yeah, I was with Nico. Nico is another delegate. He is in a wheelchair, and
a little closer to the microphone. Yes, there you go.
He is in a wheelchair, and we were waiting outside, and I was waiting with him with a couple other people in wheelchairs, and the buses were just not being accommodating at all for these people in wheelchairs. So these people in wheelchairs waiting outside in the same heat. And then every time a bus would pull up, people would just rush the doors, to the point where, you know, the bus would fill up, and guess what? There's no room for wheelchairs. So the wheelchairs got stuck, because, you know, we can't just rush the curb and jump on the bus. So that was something entirely,
nightmarish.
Yeah, yes. It was just nightmarish.
And I really want to impart, I don't think people here on the West Coast know, 98 degree weather, 89% humidity. And to be packed in, it was truly like being in a sauna, stuffed in a sauna with hundreds of people, when you couldn't move. And so...
So this was getting to... Is this getting to, or this is leaving?
This is leaving the Philadelphia Convention Center, waiting for buses to take us to the Wells Fargo Center, where the convention was to take place. The convention center, which was in the middle of downtown, was a place where we could attend caucus meetings, committee meetings, and there were other special interest groups that were housed there. So it wasn't where the actual pomp and circumstance took place.
Mm-hmm. So you all got there completely frazzled.
Yes.
Dehydrated.
Yes. And on top of that, the water fountains at the convention, Wells Fargo Center, were warm. And so it was like, God, we are so damned.
And if you wanted to buy water, it was
$4.50. I can't remember.
Very expensive.
Goodness. That's because they were clogged up with all those people in hamster balls somewhere in the system. I'm still tripping out on that. It is 20 minutes to 9 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. Goes by quickly.
Doesn't it? You are listening to Positively Revolting. We are here on your very own community radio station. That's KBOO in Portland and beyond on the interwebs at kboo.fm. And we are here talking to delegates from the Oregon group to the DNC. We have
Cole Richardson.
20 minutes. Oh, I'm sorry.
We have Cole Richardson and Abby Collins.
Indeed we do. And we have 20 minutes left.
So instead of storytelling, I'll just give you the facts, ma'am, kind of thing.
I just want to encourage our callers to call on in and ask their questions of you. Because, again, this is one of those conventions that I... This year, this cycle, is really historic. It's pivotal in so many ways. And I have to say, so many of the issues involved in the unmaking of our democracy are just naked, really, in the campaigns, in the process of this last year, culminating, really, at least in part, in the DNC last week. And no, we still have a few months to go, so I can't really say ultimately culminating, but I can say, wow, what an amazing show. You know, we live in the age of spectacle. It's true. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So now we've actually made it to the Wells Fargo Center on Monday. Let's go ahead and... So what... You know, there was a delegate walkout.
Well,
can we skip to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to make note, though, from the get-go, we had to fight for our seats. We had to constantly...
And fight whom?
Well, and your passes were not good for every day, right? I mean, not good for the entire convention. You had to... I heard someone that was interviewed on Democracy Now! Saying that she... And I think she was from the California delegation, that her passes were revoked...
They issued
and they were supposed to
a
be for,
daily credential
right,
every morning. Yes.
Instead of for the entire... Since you were a delegate for the entire convention,
correct.
You did not get a pass for the entire convention.
No, we received them daily. That was imparted to us that it was very important. We were at breakfast at 7 a.m., regardless of what time the gavel hit, but we had to be down at 7 a.m. to pick up credentials. And, you know... We as delegates were voted by our different congressional districts or at the state convention, and every day we had to fight for our seat. There were people who would come in from unknowns, you know, from other states or people just mysteriously showing up wanting to sit in our seat. And oftentimes I would say there was a handful of us that would openly like, who are you? What are you doing here? You're from California, you have seats over there. Go over there, you know? I mean, it just...
So when you say you had to fight for your seats, random people, the system, who were you fighting?
Do you want to address that, or do you want me to address that?
Go ahead. You had a much different experience than I did on Monday.
So I would say that it got more egregious as the week went on, but there were people... Well, first of all, our own state wanted us to be assigned to certain seats so that we were sitting alternate with... Hillary caucus delegates from Oregon. And there was a lot of contention about that. Because there were other people from unknowns, whether they are so-called actors, that's speculation, you know, that were paid $50 for a seat or just volunteers from the Hillary for America campaign, there were any number of people that were trying to take Bernie seats from the delegates and or seats from Bernie delegates. It became so bad as the week progressed that our own DPO, Democratic Party of Oregon, was very protective of their own delegates from Oregon, regardless of whether they were from the Hillary camp or the Bernie camp. And because they realized that we were fighting an onslaught of people who wanted to inch us out, that in essence, it was either comply or leave. And that was the feeling and the sentiment that we got from day one and throughout the week, and
so
it only got worse.
Comply meant what?
Comply in the sense that you need to sit in your seats and listen to the barrage of propaganda that, in essence...
Be good little children?
Yes. Hillary is a saint and Trump is the devil. And that was the messaging that we got hour after hour, minute after minute, day after day. And it wears on you.
Yeah. So, Cole, what was your experience?
My Monday experience was very different. I was actually walking around, I was Nico's caregiver on Monday because his caregiver was unable to get there in time to actually get their credentials. So my day was spent in one of the few ADA accessible locations inside the Wells Fargo Center, which was not even... It was next to the Oregon delegation, but not adjacent to necessarily. Mm-hmm. So Nico and I, being Oregon delegates, couldn't even be with the Oregon delegation just because of lack of access. And we were joining in the chants, and because the ADA section was in the middle of the Washington delegation, naturally there were more Bernie delegates in there than Clinton delegates. And to counter that, I believe the DNC thought, oh, well, we need to figure out some way to silence them. So their thinking was, let's shove a bunch of able-bodied Clinton delegates in there, to the point where the ADA section was no longer accessible. And this was an ongoing theme throughout the week. The ADA accessibility was a joke. It was disgusting, and especially to see on Wednesday or Thursday, I believe, the DNC had a presentation on stage about the passing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and they actually called Nico to see if he would pretty much be a prop on the stage for them, and he agreed to it, but the reason he was not a prop on their stage was because they couldn't even send him an accessible bus in time to get there to be a prop. Oof. On their stage.
Oof. Ooh. Let's go ahead and talk to Francis. Francis has been waiting for a minute. Good morning, Francis. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you to your guests for sharing their experience. From watching on national TV, we missed a lot of the protests. I mean, it was pretty pitiful how they quashed most of anything anybody had to say. But and to your guest who had done research on the Clinton Foundation and so on, I just wondered if she had ever heard about Hillary's brother, Tony Radom, after the earthquakes in Haiti when Clinton was down there with his foundation. Somehow Tony got a permit issued by the government of Haiti to do gold mining excavations down there. Have you heard about that?
I have not.
I have not.
Okay, well, that's something interesting to look into. Mm-hmm. But my question to you is, after all this, and after so many things, I won't go into it now, such as what happened in Honduras when Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State, to the people there. And after what happened at the convention and all the underheaded things that have been happening by the Democratic National Committee for quite a while, people like me are continuing the movement by supporting the Green Party. And what do you say to people who say to you that if you don't vote for Hillary, you're voting for Trump?
All right. Thanks very much, Frances.
I would like to know what you say to them.
Thanks, Frances. You took our question away, but that's good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if you noticed, I took a huge deep breath.
That doesn't necessarily come across on radio, but
yes, I know. That's what I was saying.
I was going to narrate. We see two people pondering.
Choosing
well,
we see
words,
one person
I think.
Pondering.
No, I see two people pondering. Okay. I do. So there's a couple things to unpack in that. One, let's just go ahead and answer the question. What do you say to people who, agree or disagree? What do you say to people who say voting for anyone other than Hillary is voting for Trump?
Our vote is our vote, and I vote for who I want to see as president. And if I'm not voting for Hillary, I'm definitely not voting for Trump, then I'm voting for the person that I want to see. And that vote should not be construed in such a way that it is considered a vote for Trump, because this is the way that our broken system keeps cycling in it. If you don't vote for a third party candidate, the third party won't win, but you shouldn't vote for the third party because that's throwing your vote away. It's like, we need to be able to break out of this system, because clearly these two parties aren't where they're not looking out for our best interests.
They have no, do you feel like they have much vision left? I'm almost
No.
Also, how many years do people have to go through the voting for the lesser of holding your nose and voting? Is that really exercising your right to vote?
No. And it really is. We heard this back in 2000, and I'm sure even before. I'm young, so I remember 2000. But, it was, don't vote for Nader, because a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush. And we got Bush.
Not because of Nader.
But not because of Nader.
I think there were some hanging chads and some Florida, some Supreme Court, some election theft. I think we call that election theft.
Yeah.
That's actually what we call that. Nothing to do with Nader or third party candidates. Let's talk about Dem Exit. Hashtag Dem Exit. And I want to jump to this. There's so much I want to hear about from actually what happened inside the convention, but we've got 8 minutes left. So strategy-wise, there is, because of many of the shenanigans that people have seen, a lot of folks are feeling dissatisfied, perhaps feeling like perhaps the Democratic Party is not representing their interests. And so there is this, Dem Exit movement. Your opinions. What have you seen?
Well, the first and most profound Dem Exit happened at the Democratic National Convention in a true exercise of civil disobedience at its best. And I wish I had the time to give you the backstory and the planning of all that, because that in itself is fascinating. But what I'm really most proud of, and I have said it time and time again since coming home, I am proud to be an Oregonian. Right now, I'm not proud to be an American. And I don't know what to make of the Democratic Convention or Democratic Party, because every time I go to a DP party at any level, I leave frustrated and angry. When I go to a grassroots meeting, I feel uplifted and hopeful.
But I'm bum bum.
Yes.
But
as far as the Dem Exit that happened at the convention, there are a group of women here in Oregon who made all the signs, more than 80 plus hours of volunteer time, to make these skirts with messaging inside the skirts that we as female delegates could covertly wear in without any perceived notion that these would turn into huge, giant banners. Because there was a laundry list of things that we were not allowed to bring in, and huge stipulations about this, that, and the other, and security. And so there was a lot of concern, people had about losing credentials.
Deadly banners. We don't want deadly banners coming in.
And after the roll call vote, it was in uniform that all the Bernie delegates decided to walk out. Just prior to that, we started displaying the skirts slash banners, you know, which had simple messages. They weren't slandering to any particular individual, but it was like, we are the 99%, no TPP, no justice, no peace, no, what was it? I can't even remember all the
there
slogans. We had about
them.
47. They tried to make 50 skirts, but there wasn't even enough of us to care, you know, to wear them in. So, but we wanted to make sure that all the states had them. And then this mass walkout, and I got a lot of flack from my fellow former journalist friends, you know, why would a former journalist be involved in such a thing, you know? And I thought it was brilliant because not only was there a walkout, but there was a sit-in in the media tent as a way of saying, look, we are being silenced. People wore gags. People wore tape over their mouths that said silenced. And it was the first time there was this notion that was presented to the media that something's awry. And those people that were sitting in the tent did not speak. And I felt that was a way I could utilize my role. Because of a lot of health issues, I didn't want to be in the fray. The police had surrounded the media tent, and it gave opportunity like people like myself and other fellow delegates to address the media. Why is this happening?
So I wanna. We have 2 minutes left. After the walkout, I remember reading that during Clinton's acceptance speech, things were very tightly controlled. That there was no exits allowed. That it once you were in place after a certain time, doors were locked and there was no exit. Is that true?
Are you talking about during Clinton's speech?
You tell me when it happened.
So there was a lot of I can't even find the word. I'm sorry. Where
tight control of?
Yeah, we weren't allowed to move as freely in and out of our seats, because any time we stepped up out of our seats, whether it was to go to the bathroom or to, you know, maybe to try and find water somewhere, somebody slipped into our seat, and
like the Academy Awards, I think.
Far worse.
Without the formals, okay.
Far worse. It was very contentious, and of course there were security issues when a presidential candidate is speaking. They'd want a lot of movement, which makes sense. But it was so apparent that when somebody left, someone would sit in their seat or stand in their seat or put signs over us, so that what the general public, the American public, or the international viewers were seeing was so absolutely polished beyond polished. I one day went home just to scan all the news channels to see what other people were seeing, and it was not what we were experiencing.
Wait,
sort of the behavior of someone who is so desperate to be president they will do anything.
So we are
out of time. We're out of show.
And I just final thought from either of you. You know, where we go from here is probably not something we can actually answer in a minute and a half. But any final words, any final thoughts from Cole or Abby?
Definitely do some research about what happened at the convention. Don't just look at your mainstream media sources. Actually, I think Democracy Now! Did a really good job at covering the actual convention, the heart of the convention. But as far as going from here, just get involved. Get involved in some way, whether it's within the Democratic Party or without or out of it. Just get involved, because otherwise, you know, we're going to keep seeing the same system year after year.
I think until we can finally in this country get to a multi-party system, which I have been a proponent for a long time, is to get involved at the local level. Because when it comes to November, I have less than 100 days to figure out how I'm going to vote. And I will vote with my conscience. That's what people need to do. But in the meantime, if you feel like your vote can't make a difference, you can make a difference in your community.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being here. And for doing the work you're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Take good care. And we shall be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Positively revolting as ever.
And we hope you are too.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Abrupt Climate Change. I talk with Dr. Guy McPherson Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost in Portland. Dr. Guy McPherson